You're listening to The Oddscast, the original UFC betting podcast that's straight to the point. Hosted by leading MMA oddsmaker Nick Kalikas and MMA journalist Brian Heminger, they provide you the absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting. MMAoddsbreaker.com. Don't place your wagers without us.
Welcome to the Oddscast, presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 238 event, which takes place in Chicago, Illinois. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, Kyle Marley lost 1.13 units on his free bet for UFC on ESPN plus 11 on Chris Fishgold. Kyle has his bets and fantasy MMA picks available now on MMAoddsbreaker.com. Back to the present, UFC 238 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, ESPN, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a women's flyweight contest between Caitlin Chookagian, who is 11-2, and Joanne Calderwood, who is 13-3. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Before we get started real quick, a couple quick shout-outs. Make sure you guys check out betdsi.eu. That's our sponsored sportsbook for the Oddscast. Always give those guys some love. They got a lot of great stuff going on at BetDSI. And then also, as Brian mentioned, check out Big Marley 3's plays on MMAoddsbreaker.com Premium under our Premium Picks tab. The guy's up over 250 units the last year, so that's over $25,000. With his premium picks. You got to check him out. I mean, it's money in a bank in most cases. So he's got a lot of good plays for UFC 238 this weekend. So make sure you check out MMAOB Premium under our Premium Picks tab. Now getting right into the fight, Calderwood open minus 175, the comeback on Chookagian at plus 135. And right now what you're seeing over at BetDSI is Calderwood minus 111, Chookagian at minus 105. So line virtually a pick'em type of fight with a slight lean towards Calderwood. And early action did come in on the dog Chookagian. And at the price, I understand it. It is closer to a pick'em type of fight. This is going to be a split decision fight in my mind. I mean, both these ladies are very talented. Both of these ladies like to stand and bang. They're well-rounded in most aspects of the game. I think Chookagian is a little bit more of the more, I guess, overall technical, skilled MMA fighter. She's going to have a little bit of length over Calderwood in this spot here. And again, I mean, as far as pressure goes and power goes, I think I give the edge a little bit more to Calderwood. I mean, I think she's going to be the bruiser in this fight, meaning that she's going to be the one landing the harder punches. She's going to be the one pushing a little bit of a higher pace, I think. And I think what we're going to see from Chookagian is some aggression at times for sure, but she's going to be the one kind of utilizing her footwork and her movement and trying to outpoint Calderwood along the way. Now, if this fight hits the ground, it should get interesting. I think overall, obviously, the better jiu-jitsu game, I think, belongs to Chookagian, but she could end up on her back, and I think that Calderwood could get top position if that's the case as well. So in my mind, this fight's going to be an ultra-close competitive fight with a very slight edge to Calderwood because I think, again, her power is going to make the difference. I think that's going to sway the judges to go her way. So split decision type of fight. I understand why early action came in on Chookagian because, again, at plus money value, I think it's a dog or pass situation either way here. But for right now, I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Calderwood because, again, I think she's going to pull it off just with a little bit more punching power and just a little bit more, I don't want to say aggression, but I think the judges are going to like the impact of her punishment along the way more so than Chookagian.
Chookagian is talented, but I've kind of come to view her as more of a point fighter at this point. She does have the size against Calderwood. I mean, Chookagian fought at 135 in the UFC. Calderwood was fighting at 115, and now they're kind of meeting in the middle. But watching Chookagian fight, she more likes to stay on the outside and outpoint her opponents, and she doesn't really have any zip behind her punches. I don't think she has anything that's going to make Joanne Calderwood think twice about how she's attacking. So on the feet, I think Calderwood can kind of stalk Chookagian down, and Calderwood does have some heat on her strikes. I mean, she's scored some TKOs and knockouts before. Calderwood mixes things up well. She's well-versed in Muay Thai, so she's dangerous with her elbows and her knees. And what's really impressed me has been Calderwood's improvement on the ground. She, in her last two fights since moving up to 125, she's actually won with her ground game. Against Faria, Calderwood was able to pull off a triangle armbar. And then Most recently, she faced Arian Lipsky, a very dangerous striker, and Calderwood actually used her wrestling to neutralize it. So I think on the feet, Calderwood will hold her own just with the power disparity, but she can also, if things aren't going well, and maybe she's having some trouble catching up to Chookagian, Chookagian staying on the outside and, you know, dancing away on her bicycle the whole time, I think Calderwood can close the distance and get a takedown, because I think Calderwood, even though Chookagian does come from a bit of a grappling background, we haven't seen anything out of her skills in the UFC that tells me that she's a threat on the canvas. And I think if Calderwood takes her down, Calderwood can ride out from top position and maybe look for things on the ground as well. So if Chookagian's able to stay on the outside and outpoint, then she can win. But other than that, I really like Joanne Calderwood. I think her pressure, her power, and her wrestling all give her advantages. So Calderwood's going to be my pick. Now moving up to the bantamweight division, we have Eddie Wineland, who is 23-13-1, taking on Grigory Popov, who is 13-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Wineland opened minus 145, the comeback on Popov at plus 105. And right now what you're seeing over at BetDSI is Wineland minus 141, Popov plus 118. So line margins have tightened up. There's not a lot of action coming into this fight. I think a lot of people are tentative overall. And I don't blame him. I mean, you have Wineland, which has been just a savvy vet. I think one of the all-time greats in the bantamweight division. I mean, Wineland is definitely a world-class fighter. He's fought who's who and just performed relatively well. I mean, above and beyond expectations. I mean, just a tough, tough out with his wrestling, with his punching power, again, with his experience, with his jiu-jitsu. I mean, just a total stud of a fighter he's been throughout his career. 34 years old now. Obviously, he's a declining fighter. In MMA years, he's beyond that as well. But he still has a little bit left in the tank, and he can still pull off some wins. I mean, he, like I said, with all the experience that he has and the level of skill that he has, he's still going to be a difficult out, especially for a debuting guy like Popov. Popov is pretty good. I mean, he definitely looks the part of a legit debuting older prospect. I'm saying older because he's 35 years old, but obviously in MMA years, he's not what Wineland is. In fact, Popov's overall skill level as far as competition he's faced is pretty weak. I mean, his resume is not that impressive. He's beat a bunch of cans overall. But if you look at his overall technique, I mean, he's a Muay Thai fighter. He's got a background in Muay Thai, I should say, as well. He's got a pretty strong grappling game to go along with it. So he is a well-rounded fighter. He's capable of finishing the fight on the floor. He's capable of knocking you out on the feet as well. He's got some nasty kicks. I mean, whether it's to the body, to the head, or to the legs, he can be very effective with his legs kicks. So the guy is dangerous, and I think it's going to be an interesting fight. That's why you're seeing Wineland only as a slight favorite, because you have a declining fighter in Wineland against, again, a guy that's a little bit fresher despite his age. He's coming in. He's a dangerous finisher as well. So this should be a fun fight. I mean, both these guys are definitely going to take it to each other here. I'm going to side with Wineland, though, a little bit more, because I think just his experience and who he's faced and level of competition, and he still has enough left in the tank where I don't think Popov finishes him. So I think as this fight progresses, it's going to get interesting. And again, the level of competition from Wineland just kind of puts me over the top with him. Even though he is a declining fighter, I think that Popov's probably not going to throw anything he hasn't seen at him before. So I do like Wineland in this fight, but I'm almost hoping I'm wrong in a way, because I would love to see Popov come in here and just have an impressive UFC debut and start putting on a nice little run and having another legit fighter in a bantamweight division. But I don't think that's going to be the case. I think Wineland's going to still have enough left in the tank and get this job done here. So the pick is Wineland. Hopefully it's a good fight.
Popov is definitely dangerous offensively. My problem with him is defensively, because so far Popov hasn't really faced very dangerous strikers, and he's been able to get these crazy wins with Goga Plata's and flying crane kicks, and he looks flashy and fun, and he totally could win this fight. The problem is if Eddie Wineland weathers some of those strikes and attacks, then I think Popov's defense is a bit lacking. He hasn't really had to worry about the offense of his opponents so far that much. And potentially, he could walk right into something, because Eddie Wineland is a terrific counter striker. That's really what he's based his entire career on. He has this kind of pressure, offensive attack that kind of forces his opponents to fight back. And then that's when he counters. And if he can get that going against Popov, and if he could just slip something and counter, then I think Popov gets knocked out. So I would not be shocked one bit if Popov, surprises Weiland with some crazy stuff early, but Weiland kind of figures it out and then ends up getting a knockout maybe around the second round or so. That being said, Popov is skilled. I mean, this is, even though he hasn't really faced much competition, he clearly has some offensive skills. And if he's able to connect with those, Weiland is getting old enough and seasoned enough that he potentially could get caught and finished. It's not out of the realm of possibility. But that being said, I just think at some point Popov overcommits and Weiland clips him and he goes out. So I'm going to side with Eddie Weiland. I think the veteran still has a few tricks up his sleeve, and I think that he does utilize something here against Popov to get the victory. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Bevan Lewis, who is 6-1, taking on Darren Stewart, who is 9-4. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Lewis opened minus 155, Stewart plus 115. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, we are seeing Lewis minus 192, the comeback on Stewart at plus 163. So line margins, again, have tightened up a little bit. Lewis getting a little bit more action. I get it. I mean, honestly, this is a tough fight because Lewis is by far the better fighter here. I mean, and I have respect for Stewart. I know he's a talented fighter. A tough out, man. The guy has a ton of power. He's got a tough takedown game as far as, like, defensively. He could keep the fight upright in most cases and deliver some punishment on the feet, and he does have that power. He's had a little bit of a mixed, you know, start to his UFC career, up and down a little bit for Stewart, but overall, I mean, the guy definitely is a threat on the feet. And why this is a tough fight for me is, like I said, Lewis is by far the better overall fighter. I think there's no question about it. I mean, the guy has skill on the feet. He's got some nice clean technique to go along with the length that he has over most people as well. I mean, there's a lot of comparisons out there with one of his training partners, John Jones, of course. And I mean, you can see some similarities in his game. I mean, you really can. But make no mistake, he's not quite at that level yet, but you could see the potential is there with Lewis. I mean, he's got the athleticism. He's got the technique. He's starting to get that experience. He's got good camp behind him, good training. I mean, the sky's the limit for him, really. But the problem with him is he is hittable. Defensively, he does have a bit of a suspect chin. And I'm saying that, and he's only has one loss, and he's coming off of that loss in his last fight. And he was looking really good against Uriah Hall and then got caught and finished in that fight. So all it takes is one mistake against a powerful striker, and Lewis can be out. And I think that's kind of the situation here. He has to be very careful because I think Lewis is going to go out here and probably clearly win this fight, be winning this fight at least. But then the caution is if Stewart does land that big bomb, how Lewis is going to take it. And defensively, that's my concern for Lewis. So I have to side with Lewis because he is the better fighter. More times than not, he is going to get this done. But again, if you're betting this fight, it's tough. I mean, especially as the line creeps up a little bit more, it's not an easy fight to bet. I mean, it's kind of been bouncing up and down a little bit earlier. I think it was up over 2-1 and now it's starting to crawl back down. So there is two-way action coming in on this fight back and forth, especially as we get closer to fight day. So if you're laying a lot of chalk on this fight, just be cautious a little bit. But I do think Lewis is the right side. So meaning that, again, he's a more talented fighter. He should kind of bounce back and redeem himself. If he does not get that knockout blow landed on him, I think he does look impressive doing so and probably finishes Stewart along the way, honestly. So hopefully this is one of those situations that Lewis comes out here and just dominates and gets back on track. It looks like the prospect we all think he could be. So the pick is Lewis, and hopefully he comes through for us.
I'm definitely a little concerned after Lewis got knocked out against Hall, but I do think that Darren Stewart isn't as good as Uriah Hall, and he's not quite as powerful as Hall. So as long as Lewis is taking Stewart seriously, then he should be in pretty good shape here. Lewis is a dangerous striker, has good power, and Lewis also has a bit of wrestling to fall back on. So I wouldn't be shocked if Lewis controlled the stand-up against Stewart and if he mixed in some takedowns every once in a while. So this is clearly a fight that I think the UFC wants Lewis to bounce back with. Stewart is, he's a good fighter, but he has not had that much success in the UFC yet. And I feel like, with Lewis, he's a very powerful striker. He's a very talented, well-rounded, MMA fighter. And I think the coming out party got delayed with, the third round come from behind loss to Uriah Hall. But I think he gets back on track here. Unless Darren Stewart clips him with something nasty, and he very well could. I mean, Stewart has pulled off some surprises in the past, and I've been wrong about him a couple times now. But I do think that this is a very winnable fight for Bevan Lewis, and as long as he takes Stewart seriously, he should win. So I'm going to side with Bevan Lewis. So I think he wins a decision. Now, headlining the Fight Pass prelims is a women's strawweight bout between Xiaonan Yan, who is 10-1, and Angela Hill, who is 9-6. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Yan up -135, Hill -105. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, we are seeing Yan -164, the comeback on Hill at +138. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. And Yan getting the early action, she got bet up to about 2-1 or so. And now we're seeing action come back on Hill and the line dropping back down some as well. So there are split opinions on this fight. And this should be a great fight. I'll tell you what, both these ladies definitely talented. Both these ladies like to stand and bang, and that's what they do best. And so we should be in for fireworks here, no doubt about it. It's a tough one. I mean, in a way it is, because I think Hill has been performing relatively well. She's had some tough fights. I mean, she's been staying really active, which you got to respect and like. I mean, that's what you want to see. But I'm almost thinking that she's fighting a little bit too often against high-level competition. That last fight she had against Escobel, even though she was a big favorite, that was a lot tougher than, you know, it ended up planning out to be for her, for sure. And now she's bouncing back, taking this fight on short notice against a very game opponent in Yan. And Yan delivers a punishment, man. I'll tell you what, she's definitely a very good striker, effective striker. She comes forward, puts a lot of pressure on you. I mean, she has the type of aggression and power that a lot of ladies can't take. And on top of that, I think she's a better grappler in this spot as well. I mean, you don't see it a lot of it from Yan at this point, but at the same time, I think here in this aspect and the way she matches up with Hill, we might see Yan trying to even look for some of those takedowns and to utilize some of that ground game as well. So I think she has some advantages in this fight over Hill. Again, Hill, a very technical striker. I mean, it's fun to watch her fight because she is capable of outpointing her opponents and getting into some firefights along the way as well. But I just think that Yan is going to be a little bit too much for her. Again, I think it's going to be the power difference. I think Yan's going to be the one landing the harder shots on Hill. Yan's going to be the one kind of pushing forward a little bit. Yan's going to be the one having her up against the cage. I think she's just going to kind of out-muscle Hill, and I think that's going to end up swaying the judges and winning her the fight here. So should be a competitive fight. And again, with the state of MMA judging, especially in the ladies divisions, when there is a lot of competitive type of stylistic matchups, we're seeing a lot of split decision type of fights. So again, I understand. I think it's going to be another competitive fight, but I think Yan is just a tough matchup right now for Hill. And I think she's biting off a little bit more than she could chew in this spot here. And Yan probably gets the best victory of her career thus far. So should be a good fight. Interesting one for sure. I'm looking forward to it, but I just think Yan's going to be a little bit too much for Hill in this spot.
And I'm right with you. I mean, Angela Hill is a talented fighter. She's a good striker. She's aggressive. She has some pop in her hands, but this is a quick turnaround, stepping in on short notice for Felice Herrig, who had a knee injury, and she's taken on somebody that is really dangerous. I mean, Yan has impressed me so far. I mean, she hasn't been able to get that TKO or knockout that she's been pursuing, and because she had five of them before entering the UFC, but so far, I mean, she's won unanimous decisions in all three of her fights, and she's faced some decent competition. I mean, starting with Kaylin Curran, obviously not the best competition, but getting wins over Vivian Pereira and Siri Kondo, I think were very impressive, and she's been pretty one-sided so far. And Yan is just a really aggressive, has good power in her hands, and she has really good size, for the division as well. So I just think that she's going to be a little bit too much and too physical for Angela Hill, who has a history of kind of wilting against aggressive strikers. You saw it when Hill faced when she faced Nina Anzorov. You saw it in Courtney Casey. And then we've seen it against Entourage. So I just think this is a relatively bad matchup, and while it could be a close fight at times because Hill is a decent striker, as long as she can kind of settle in, I just feel that Yan's going to be too much for her and overwhelms her at some point and either gets a late TKO or at least another unanimous decision. So my pick is going to be Yan. Now, moving on to the ESPN preliminary card, we have a featherweight contest between Ricardo Lamas, who is 19-7, and Calvin Kattar, who is 19-3. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Kattar opened minus 165, the comeback on Lamas at plus 125. And right now, what you're seeing over at BetDSI is Kattar minus 156, Lamas at plus 134. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. And again, another spot where there's two-way action coming into this fight. You know what? To me, this is kind of the passing of the torch here as well. I know Lamas has been a really, really good fighter. Obviously, again, title contender. I mean, just an outstanding, world-class, complete fighter. Nice clean striking on the feet, effective boxing. He's got obviously wrestling background with outstanding grappling to go along with it. So again, prototypical, solid, complete MMA fighter with a lot of experience and beaten nothing but high level competition throughout his career to the point where, man, I mean, the guy's just, like I said, a world class fighter, high level fighter. And he deserves to be where he's at. Now that said, you know, I mean, it's to the point where I think he's going to be used more as a gatekeeper than anything else. And the type of gatekeeper role that he's going to be in, if you beat Lamas, you're going to end up, I think, being in a title contender kind of realm a little bit. And that's exactly the spot that Kattar's in right now. I think if he comes in here and looks good and presses over a guy like Lamas, he will be in the title mix a little bit. So this is an important fight, obviously, for both guys. Lamas obviously wants to stay relevant, where Kattar, again, this is a big win over a guy like Lamas, is going to do wonders for his career. The way these guys match up, it should be an awesome fight, because I think on the feet, it'll go back and forth. I mean, Lamas, again, he's got technical skill. He's got some underrated power to go along with it, but I think Kattar is the better striker on the feet. He's going to be a little bit more effective. He's got the more dangerous knockout power, and he's capable of finishing Lamas more so than Lamas, I think, is finishing capable of finishing Kattar on the feet. So I do trust Kattar's chin a little bit more. If anything, that's been the problem for, I think, Lamas throughout his career. I mean, it's held up in some really good fights, though, as well. I mean, you would expect Lamas' chin to fold under pressure of, like, Aldo, for example. And you know, and he didn't get knocked out by a guy like Jose Aldo back in the day. So you got to take your hat off to Lamas. He has survived against dangerous strikers before, but I just think this matchup at this time of his career is not going to work out well for him. I think Kattar, again, will probably be able to keep this fight upright, use his wrestling in reverse, and on the feet, he is going to have an advantage over Lamas. I think he could win on the scorecards. I think he could possibly knock Lamas out as well. So Kattar's looked good. I'll tell you what, he's been really impressive. I know he lost to Moicano in a pretty competitive fight. I mean, he looked okay in that fight. Moicano is, I think, one of the best, obviously, featherweights in the world right now as well, so that's not necessarily a bad loss. Outside of that, though, I mean, he's really overperformed, in my opinion, and Kattar looks to continue that rise a little bit. So I do think it's his time right now. I think, again, this is kind of a stepping stone type of fight, and I think Kattar's game, and he's going to probably take this, you know, and utilize this to his full ability and get the W over a guy like Lamas. So can't ever disrespect Lamas and count him out. He's going to be a tough out, but I still think this stylistically, this is a great matchup for Kattar and a lot riding on it, and I think he does come through. So the pick is Kattar, and at the current price, there's probably a little bit of betting value left on Kattar as well.
And I definitely see a path to victory for Kattar. If this stays upright, Lamas, while he is a capable striker, and he's definitely surprised me at times with his striking in his career, I think Kattar is the superior striker of the two. He lands good counters. He gets stronger as the fight goes. And the fact that Lamas does have a really, really bad chin is terrifying at times. So if Kattar can connect just once or twice, then you could see Lamas getting rocked and potentially finished. On the ground, however, Lamas should have a big advantage. He is able to hold top position if he does get it to the floor, and he has some pretty nasty ground and pound and some underrated submission skills. So I'm a little concerned about that, but Lamas historically just has not had particularly good offensive wrestling. He doesn't pursue the takedown that often, and he hasn't always been successful with the takedowns. So I'm not crazy concerned about it, but it is something in the back of my mind, because if the striking isn't going well, maybe even if he gets hurt, he might shoot in for desperation takedown, and that could just completely turn the tide of the fight. So it's something to think about, but I just really like Kattar here. I think so far in his career, Kattar has faced some pretty tough fighters, and Kattar's been pretty successful. I mean, the only loss has been to Moicano, but other than that, he beat, you know, Andre Feely, he beat Shane Burgos, who is a very talented fighter, and then most recently he beat Fishgold. So and Fishgold has a good ground game. So I expect that as long as this stays upright and as long as Kattar, you know, defends the chin because Lamas does have some power. I think Cater's going to be in a good position here. I think at some point, Cater either outworks Lamas and wins a decision, but he also absolutely could connect with something and hurt him. So I'm going to side with Calvin Cater. Now dropping down to the women's strawweight division, we have Carolina Kovalkiewicz, who is 12-4, taking on Alexa Grasso, who is 10-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Kovalkiewicz opened -195, the comeback on Grasso at +155. Right now, what you're seeing over at BetDSI, Kovalkiewicz all the way down to -120, comeback on Grasso +104. So virtually a pick 'em with a slight lean towards Kovalkiewicz. I understand it. This is another tough one. And I think it's another case where you have a bit of a declining fighter in Kovalkiewicz. Again, maybe not fair to say, going up against kind of a fighter on the rise in Grasso. So this is another stepping stone type of fight for me that the UFC is matching up. And I get it. I understand it. And I think they're probably going to get their wish. I think Grasso's improved enough. This is another one of those spots where I think before she got in the UFC, Grasso's hype was a little bit overrated. I mean, you know, a lot of people were expecting her to just come in and immediately just make a run towards that title and just dominate everybody pretty much. I mean, that's kind of just high expectations again. I mean, just she had some hype about her, but I didn't think she was up to that level. I think everybody kind of made a little bit too much of her ability. But it's another one of those situations where despite her losing in the UFC, I think I've seen improvements in her overall game since she's entered the UFC, even though she has suffered a couple setbacks. I mean, the last fight to Suarez, let's face it, I'm kind of throwing that out the window a little bit right now because Suarez, in my opinion, I mean, she's a future champion and she's going to dominate most people on the ground, obviously. So take that fight out of the equation a little bit. Because again, Suarez will come run through most people in this spot. So outside of that, the Marcus fight, the Herrick fight, I mean, you know, competitive fights, but I did see some improvement along the way. You know, since her debut win over Clark as well. So I think she's picking up momentum. She's starting to get a little bit more aggressive, a little bit more effective. Her takedown defense is starting to be a little bit better. Again, take out that Suarez fight a little bit. But I think that Grasso really is finally coming into her own, and she's a little bit more comfortable. And Kovalkiewicz, again, she's a little bit on the decline, which is not what you want to see in a fighter. I mean, she was on her way, obviously, working towards a title shot, and she suffered back-to-back losses. You know, after she got that eventual title shot, that is, and then again, won a couple fights and then she suffered back to back losses again. So I believe she's lost 4 out of her last 6 fights, after, you know, or since fighting for that title. So not a good spot for her. And I think, I mean, her defense is looking worse. Her striking's looking a little bit worse. She just doesn't seem like she's at the top of her form right now. And I think that's exactly why we're going to see Grasso perform well. I think Kovalkiewicz has some advantages in this fight. I mean, if she's aggressive, if she pushes forward and her defense is a little bit better than we've seen lately, she could definitely win this fight. And she's capable of getting some takedowns. And I think she does have the better ground game in this spot as well. So Kovalkiewicz can win this fight. I just think it's good timing again right now, how they match up stylistically, Grasso's improvements compared to Kovalkiewicz's decline. I think that's going to be the difference here. I think Grasso's going to make up enough the difference here that she's going to actually be in the spot where she does point Kovalkiewicz to a win here. So I think she'll do more damage along the way. She's just going to be landing a little bit more steady, and I think she's going to look good doing so, enough to impress the judges, and she's going to squeak by and get the decision win. So my pick is actually Grasso. And at the dog price, I think it's a dog or pet situation for sure in this spot, so I kind of lean her way as well. So the pick is Grasso to pick up one of the biggest wins of her UFC career and kind of rebound after the loss to who is probably the future UFC champion in Suarez.
I'm in complete agreement. Kovalkiewicz at one point was, you know, a top women's strawweight, but it definitely feels like she's falling off and is on the decline at this point. She's just been in a few too many wars. She's taken some serious punishment, getting, you know, knocked out cold by Andrade. So, I said it before. I don't think the old Kovalkiewicz, like when she was first entering the UFC, had any chance in a million years of losing to Michelle Waterson in a fight. And she just got outworked by Waterson. And it was, you know, kind of embarrassed by Waterson over the course of that fight most recently. And now she's facing somebody that's even, you know, younger and hungrier in Alexa Grasso. And I just think this is a bad timing for Kovalkiewicz and great timing for Grasso. Because if she does get the win here, it'll be by far the biggest victory of her career. And Grasso's talented. She has some good technical boxing. She throws solid combinations. She has some decent technical ability. but Grasso can be controlled on the ground. Obviously, we saw that in the Suarez fight, and you've seen that where she's had a little bit of trouble on the ground in the past. But Grasso taking on Kovalkiewicz, typically Kovalkiewicz doesn't look to take fights to the floor. So if she just wants to keep doing her thing and standing and banging, then this is a great stylistic matchup for Grasso, because Kovalkiewicz doesn't quite have those same reflexes she used to have. Her defense isn't quite as good. She can still dish it out, and she could still, she still has a little bit of pop in her hands, but I think, if this fight stays standing over the course of three rounds, it's Grasso's fight to lose. I know that she's coming, after about a year layoff because of some injuries, but as long as Grasso is healthy, this is perfect timing to take on a solid veteran like Kovalkiewicz, and it could be a very nice feather in her cap. So I'm going to side with Alexa Grasso. I think she wins a decision. Now, moving up to the bantamweight division, we have Pedro Munhoz, who is 18-3, taking on Aljamain Sterling, who is 17-3. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Munhoz open -125, the comeback on Sterling -115. And right now what you're seeing over at BetDSI is Sterling the favorite -125, Munhoz at +107. So the line flipped, and there obviously there is two-way action coming in this fight. It's getting bet back and forth a little bit as well. Sterling was a little bit of a higher favorite. Now we're starting to see more action come back in on Munhoz. Awesome fight. Both these guys deserve to be in this spot. This is kind of like a title eliminator type of fight here with both these guys, I mean, just knocking on that door. And both of these guys have improved quite a bit as well. I mean, they've had some setbacks in the UFC a little bit, but I mean, the role recently that Sterling's been on, I'll start with him first, it's been nothing but impressive. I mean, the guy, I think, keeps on getting better, especially, you know, after the disappointing KO loss that he had to Moraes. I wasn't sure how he was going to handle it and how he was going to come back. But man, since that time, he just kind of turned a switch. And he's looked great against very solid competition, you know. So I think mentally, physically, he's never been better. I mean, more confident, anything. So this is a great time for Sterling. He has some advantages in this spot over Munhoz as well. A little bit of size, a little bit of reach, a little bit of length. Wrestling should be to his advantage overall as well. Now, he has to be careful because Munhoz, I think, is the better pure submission fighter. Now, Sterling is very game. I love his scrambling ability. I think he's very tough to submit. But, man, Munhoz is the type of fighter, if you get caught in his guillotine choke, you're not getting out of it. So it doesn't matter how good your jiu-jitsu is at times. I mean, he's that dangerous and capable of submitting you on the ground. I think he's got decent wrestling, offensive wrestling in his own right. And Sterling at times, I mean, you know, even though offensively he does, you know, usually work his takedown game better, and backpack you a little bit more. So, I think Munhoz might end up on top on the ground as well. And if that's the case, that'll be obviously bode well for him. So I think this fight is going to take place every aspect of MMA on the floor, obviously up against a cage, in the middle of the cage, in space and distance, everything Sterling's going to try to use on the feet. He's going to try to utilize his kicking game a little bit, obviously over Munhoz. Munhoz does have some pretty nasty leg kicks in his own right, but I think his boxing, his speed, and his power and the way he's been fighting recently, I mean, he's going out to finish people. So I do trust Munhoz, even though Sterling has that length on the feet. I think Munhoz's pure boxing is going to be a little bit more effective. I think his power is going to be obviously a little bit more dangerous for Sterling. And then even on the ground, I like kind of what I see from Munhoz a little bit better than Sterling. Again, I know that what Sterling's been able to do to people on the ground. I just think this is kind of a weird stylistic matchup for Sterling, because I think anywhere the fight takes place, this is a dangerous spot for him. On the feet, Munhoz could probably catch him. I think on the ground, Munhoz might catch him there as well, even though, again, technically sound, defensively, he showed us, I mean, all nothing but good signs from Sterling there. I just think this is just one of those matchups that Munhoz is a finisher, and he's been finishing people as of late, and he might possibly go out there and get it done against Sterling as well. If not, if it hits the scorecards, we're going to see another competitive split decision type of fight between these two for sure. So all signs for me are pointing a little bit more towards the underdog right now. And Munhoz, it's a dog or pass situation, no doubt. It's hard to lay chalk on this fight at all. With that all said, I'm going to lean slightly towards Munhoz to get it done.
And I'm going to come in the other way. I mean, Aljamain Sterling is a fighter that when he first entered the UFC, a lot of people were hyping him up as a future champion. And he looked the part, at least early, with just some really impressive ground skills. And then he got exposed a little bit. You know, he had some cardio issues against Brian Caraway. And then he got knocked out by Marlon Moraes. So, you know, he had his share of struggles. but he's really bounced back. I mean, the three-fight winning streak that he's been on, I mean, he has absolutely smoked his opponents, and I've been really impressed. I mean, dominating Jimmy Rivera, finishing Cody Stamann, he looks like a new man. And Sterling it hasn't just been with his grappling. It's been with improvement in his striking as well. And that's something he needs because he has ridiculous proportions in the bantamweight division. I mean, 71-inch reach at 135 pounds is crazy. And, I mean, that gives him a 7-inch reach over Munhia. So if he can learn to strike better and use it, then that makes him twice as dangerous. And he is getting better. At first, he was just kind of throwing kicks and keeping his distance and just being unorthodox with his striking, but he's legitimately showing some improvement in his stand-up. And I actually think that if he can keep Munhia's on the outside, he can hold his own on the feet with Munhia's. Clearly, power for power, Munhia's is better, and Munhia's has that ability to force opponents to, you know, drop their defenses and brawl a little bit. And I really hope Sterling doesn't do that, because that's asking for trouble. But if Sterling can stay composed on the feet, I think that he can actually land some points and do well in the stand-up. But what really will make him shine is obviously the ground game. Munhia's has an extremely good guillotine choke, but as long as Sterling doesn't leave his neck exposed and just dive in haphazardly, Sterling should have a very nice path to victory with top position on the canvas. He has excellent wrestling, excellent top control, decent ground and pound, but he also has some very unorthodox attacks from top position and some sneaky submission skills. Now, I'm not guaranteeing that he would get a finish if this fight goes to the floor, because Munhia's is a very talented submission artist himself, but I think with some of the unorthodox things that Sterling has up his sleeve, he could make this fight very, very interesting if it does go to the floor. So I'm going to side with Aljamain Sterling. I think he holds his own on the feet, and that opens up an opportunity to get this to the canvas, and that's where he'll shine. So my pick is going to be Sterling. Now, moving on to the main event of the preliminary card. In the women's strawweight division, we have Tatiana Suarez, who is 7-0, taking on Nina Anzorov, who is 10-5. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Suarez opened minus 515, the comeback on Anzorov at plus 345. And right now what you're seeing over at BetDSI is Suarez minus 909, the comeback on Anzorov, plus 575. So needless to say, action coming in on Suarez. I get it. Again, as I said earlier, I think Suarez is a potential future champion. And I mean, what we've seen from her thus far, it's just been amazing. I mean, they're comparing her to Khabib as far as, you know, the female divisions, and she's just that. I mean, she's that dominant on the ground at times. That's a fair comparison. And I know that's crazy to say, because Khabib has been just, I mean, out of this world as far as grinding his opponents out and just working his game on the ground. Well, Suarez is the female version of that. She's the closest thing that we've seen to that. So she's just such a tough fighter to get off you. I mean, she utilizes that ground game, the wrestling that she has, her background very good. Obviously, she has good ground and pound to go along with, good submissions as well. So she's just so tough. She's just so dominant at what she does. I mean, the path to victory against Suarez is definitely controlling the wrestling, sprawl, brawl type of situation, and try to outstrike her on the feet. And that is very possible. And Anzorov can do that if she's, you know, utilizing that game plan. If she's able to keep this fight off the floor, Anzorov can win this fight. She's the better striker. I think Anzorov has made a lot of improvements. I mean, and that's the thing with Anzorov. I got nothing but respect for her. I mean, she's improved to the point where, I mean, she's making herself relevant. I mean, she's on a nice, I believe, 4-fight win streak over solid competition along the way. I mean, she's just coming off of a win over Gadella. Who would have thought that? I mean, early on in her career, that she would have an impressive win over on her resume. So I'm not disrespecting Anzorov by any means. Obviously, she's, you know, the girlfriend of Munhia or of Nunes. So she has, the best, one of the best training partners, one of the best female fighters of all time, training with her obviously all the time as well, in Nunes. So I think that Ansarov has that going for her, and that has definitely pushed her to another level in her game. So I think, you know, obviously iron sharpens iron type of thing. I think it's rubbed off really well on Ansarov as far as the training she's getting. So that said, I still think she's biting off more than she could chew here against Suarez. Suarez is just such a dominant fighter, what she does, like I said at the beginning. So I think she does end up taking it. Even though Ansarov's takedown defense has improved, I think she still cannot control this fight by keeping it upright. Suarez is going to utilize what she does best, get her down, control the ground, and probably finish her on the ground. Or if not, grind her out for, you know, three rounds and get the decision win that way too. So curious to see if this fight does play out on the feet for any amount of time, how Ansarov is going to react here, because I think she is going to have the advantage, and how Suarez is going to defend. But that said, overall, Suarez is going to do what she does best, and I think she's going to end up getting another impressive win over Ansarov. It's going to be probably a tougher fight than we all think, because Ansarov has improved so much, but still hard to point or hard to count out such a good fighter like Suarez. And the pick is Suarez, and let's see what the future holds.
And I'm going to keep this one sweet and simple. I know Nina Ansarov is talented. She is definitely one of the best strikers in the women's strawweight division, and that victory she's coming off of against Gedalia, very impressive. That being said, I think Tatiana Suarez is an unstoppable force. Her wrestling is so good, and she's been able to just embarrass every girl that she's faced so far in her fight. And the only reason that she's not champion right now is she just hasn't been active, and she's been fighting about once per year. So Suarez being 7-0, her fights haven't even been close so far. She just gets her opponents to the ground. She batters them on the canvas and then either wins a very one-sided decision or gets a TKO or gets a submission so far. And I think that's what happens here. I mean, Nina Ansarov is going to be game on the feet, but I mean, how long is this fight really going to be standing? So I think it's only a matter of seconds before Suarez shoots in, and I don't think Ansarov has the takedown defense to prevent it. And Suarez, in my opinion, is the best female wrestler by a landslide across any weight class. I think she could take down bantamweights if she was fighting at the 135-pound division. That's how good I think she really is. So I think Suarez gets us to the floor and gets a finish. And Ansarov's great, but this is a really, really bad stylistic matchup. And she's been taken down before by fighters that aren't even close to as good of a wrestler as Suarez. So unless Ansarov lands like a knee as Suarez is diving in, then she's going to get taken down and she's going to get dominated on the canvas. So I think, like Nick said earlier, Tatiana Suarez is a future champion. I think it's only a matter of time until she has that belt around her waist. And this is going to be a very big stepping stone for her to get that opportunity. So Suarez is my pick. Now, moving on to the pay-per-view main card in the heavyweight division, we have Tai Tuivasa, who is 10-1, taking on Blagoy Ivanov, who is 17-2 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Tuivasa opened -165, the comeback on Ivanov at +125, and right now what you're seeing at BetDSI is Tuivasa -132, Ivanov +115. Line margins have tightened up. Two-way action on this fight as well, with a little bit more action recently coming in on the dog Ivanov. I like it. I agree with that late action coming in as we get closer to fight time on Ivanov. This is an interesting fight. Obviously, both these guys have a ton of knockout power. Both of them are extremely dangerous. I just think what it comes down to, basically, in this spot, Ivanov has been a lot more battle-tested throughout his career. If you look at some of his fights that he's had in Bellator and World Series of Fighting and how he goes about things, he's not an easy guy to put away. He's very durable. He's tough. He absorbs punishment. I mean, he's definitely hittable, but he absorbs it. On the ground, the guy has a sneaky sub-game to go along with it as well. I mean, he's got some ability to, on the ground. Obviously, he's got the combat sambo background, whatever the case may be. So he's got a lot to go – I mean, with his resume beyond what he's done and accomplished so far in the UFC. I know it's a questionable decision in his last fight. It was a real close decision that could have went realistically either way. And a lot of people were thinking that Rothwell won that fight. And before that, unfortunately, he lost the decision to JDS. But I think people are writing off Ivanov a little bit too soon here. I think the way that he matches up against Tuivasa is a really good fight for him. Tuivasa, I like him. I think there's a lot of potential in his game as well. He's an athlete, obviously, the type of athlete that has a lot of potential and continues to improve his game. He's obviously getting better fight by fight as well. I just think there's still more holes in his game. I don't think he's as durable as Ivanov, and I don't think that experience or his conditioning along the way is going to pay dividends in his fight. So I think that's where he's lacking still. I think he's a little bit more chinny. I think his conditioning isn't quite as good as Ivanov. Ivanov is a type of fighter that looks tired maybe after a few minutes, but he can go the distance and keep on trying to knock your head off when he does that. You know what I mean? So I think he's the type of fighter that kind of is misleading how he looks as he progresses, where Tuivasa, as the fight goes, his cardio is getting a little bit better, but I think he's going to be the one noticeably slowing down, and that's dangerous in a guy against going against a guy like Ivanov. So for me, I'm going to lean Ivanov. I think this is a good spot for him to pick up a very impressive win over a younger fighter in Tuivasa and kind of get a little bit more respect from the UFC fans out there. So should be an interesting fight. I like the dog value in Ivanov as well. The pick is Ivanov for me to get the W, probably a KO finish over Tuivasa.
Ivanov is the better technical striker of the two. He's more experienced than Tuivasa, but I think Tuivasa does have some advantages here. He's younger. He's more aggressive. He has good power, potentially more power. And Tuivasa's the bigger, stronger guy. I know that Ivanov does come from a combat sambo background, so he does have some of that sneaky old man strength a little bit. But, I mean, Tuivasa's 6'2 compared to Ivanov's 5'11. Tuivasa has a reach advantage. So I think while Tuivasa is not going to be out there trying to technically pick apart Ivanov, if Tuivasa just stays aggressive and puts some pressure on Ivanov, I think that he can win rounds. And while I think it'll be difficult for Tuivasa to get a knockout because Ivanov is, you know, a savvy veteran with some good experience and smart defense, this is still a fight that Tuivasa can win. While Tuivasa is, you know, more raw, he makes up for that with, you know, that eagerness that he's had so far in his UFC career that has allowed him to get those victories. This is, you know, a guy that's fun to watch. And while Ivanov did bounce back from the Junior Dos Santos loss to sneak away with a close decision against Ben Rothwell, I think Tuivasa is going to be, you know, quicker, stronger, just as powerful, if not more powerful and more aggressive. So as long as Tuivasa doesn't completely gas, I think he's going to be in decent shape here. And I can see him winning 2 out of 3 rounds and getting at least a decision. So I'm going to go the other way on Tuivasa. Now dropping all the way down to the bantamweight division, we have Jimmy Rivera, who is 22-3, taking on Peter Yan, who is 12-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Yan open minus 215, Rivera plus 165. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, it is Yan coming in at minus 345. The comeback on Rivera at plus 285. So again, line margins have tightened up, more action coming in Yan's way. Difficult line to set because Rivera not too long ago was everybody's future title contender. I mean, he was definitely making a run towards that, facing high level competition. I mean, everything pointed to Rivera being, again, the next guy in line to possibly compete and challenge for a title. And then he had the setback to Moraes where went out there and got knocked out. Obviously, he rebounded. But then, again, he lost decision to Sterling in his last fight as well. So he's coming off 2 out of 3 losses. So his stock has definitely dropped to the point where now you're seeing a guy that was a bit more competitive with as far as the betting line goes, being a decent underdog, you know what I mean, as far as Yan coming in, getting all the hype. Yan kind of like took that thunder, took that appeal that Rivera had from the overall betting community and the MMA fans out there, and he has it now. Rivera was once in kind of that spot is what I'm trying to compare it to. But Yan, deservingly so, and the guy is definitely a tough out. Again, talk about future champions. I think he's lining himself up really nice for a potential title shot, and the guy has everything you want to see in a fighter. I mean, the guy over Rivera stylistically here, it is a pretty good matchup for him as well. I mean, he's going to have some size over Rivera. I think Rivera's a spark plug. Obviously, he's got good striking. He's fast. He's powerful. He's got good wrestling. He's not easy to control, Rivera, in most cases, that is, obviously. So there's a lot to like about Rivera, and he keeps on improving his ground game as well. But Jan, I think, is just a level above Rivera in almost every area of the game. I think Jan is a little bit of a better striker. I think Jan is a little bit more powerful. I think Jan has a better ground game of the two as well. So I think this is really his fight to win and lose, and I think he's going to probably get it done. So another stepping stone type of fight already in this matchup here for Jan. I think, you know, the UFC's kind of feeding him Rivera to see if he can kind of take that big step up and win it and then move on from there. And I think he's capable of doing so. So I understand why the early action coming in on Rivera. Again, tough spot, though. Tough line to set as well, because I mean, you just don't know which way the public's going to react. But I think the reaction was the right way coming in on Jan, because I do think stylistically, again, it's just a tough matchup for Rivera. Rivera's going to have to go out there and I think just catch him with something quick and powerful and just stun Jan and maybe, you know, hop on him and finish him there, because outside of that, I don't think the cards are even going to go in his favor either. So again, I think this is just Jan's fight to win or lose, and I think he gets it done. So the pick is Jan as far as the betting window goes. I mean, this is, again, a tough test and a step up. So I would not lay 3-1 on Jan right now or higher. I don't think there's some value there. I would probably skip it, pass it, and just watch it. And this should be, again, this top, from top to bottom, this card I think is pretty stacked, but this should be one of the fights that stand out the most, and it should be a fun one. So the pick is Jan. Hopefully it lives up to the hype.
Jan is definitely one of those fighters that entered the UFC, and I immediately, in that first fight watching him, thought that this guy had the potential to be a top 15 guy and a potential title challenger down the road. And he's at this point right now, this is like the crossroads for him to, if he can get past Jimmy Rivera, he's definitely going to be in the mix moving forward. So, you know, Peter Jan, he's a very talented striker, mixes it up well, has good power, has a great pace, a good motor, good conditioning. He's just a really, really fun fighter to watch. He's an offensive juggernaut. And Jimmy Rivera is a very crisp technical boxer with some wrestling to fall back on. But and that helped him go on a tremendous run in his career, where I think he had about 19 or 20 fights where he didn't lose, and he was right there at the top of the UFC, but things haven't gone his way lately. You know, he got just embarrassed by Marlon Moraes, finished very quickly. And then in his last fight against, Aljamain Sterling, that did not go his way as well. Sterling actually got the better of him on the feet, which was really surprising, and ended up winning a decision. So, I think, you know, Rivera just seems like he's lost a little bit of luster, and, you know, Jan still is a fighter on the rise with a ton of momentum. And unless Rivera is able to, you know, recapture that, I think Jan might just walk away with this one. Jan is going to be the more aggressive fighter, but Rivera does have some good technical boxing skill. When Rivera faced Munoz tried to force that to be more of a brawl. And I mean, they were slugging it out at times, but it was Rivera that was clipping Munoz and hurting him. So if Rivera can, you know, stay composed and find those openings when Jan's being aggressive, he still could bounce back and win this fight. But I favor that activity rate, that aggression from Jan. I think that'll sway the judges if this goes to decision. And Jan definitely has the power to hurt Rivera and finish him as well. So I'm going to side with Peter Jan. Now, moving up to the lightweight division, we have Tony Ferguson, who is 25-3, taking on Donald Cowboy Cerrone, who is 35-11 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
My opener with Ferguson minus 180, the comeback on Cerrone plus 150. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, we are seeing the current line. Currently, Ferguson minus 147, Cerrone plus 128. Now, there was lines out there floating around that were up over 200 at one point as well for Ferguson. So needless to say, the action coming in on Cerrone overall. But there is a lot of believers in Ferguson. So this is a spot where you're going to see some heavy two-way action coming in this fight. A lot of people are anticipating this fight. A lot of heavy action is going to come in both ways as well. Even if the lines continue to drop, make no mistake, Ferguson's getting thrown into parlays. He's getting some heavy action, like I said, along the way as well. So this is an awesome fight. I mean, stylistically, again, I think this is a tough fight for Ferguson. And this is another spot we should say off the rip that is not a formula where MMA math does well. I mean, Ferguson has several wins over opponents that Cerrone has lost to, but I still think stylistically in this fight here, the way they match up, I mean, these guys both like to stand and bang. Both of them are capable of finishing fights on the floor. Both of them have good wrestling to go along with it. A lot of times what we're seeing from Ferguson is him outlasting or outwilling his opponents, and doing some damage. Obviously in this fight here, in my opinion, Ferguson's going to have a speed advantage. He's going to be the one that's a little bit more capable of maybe pulling out some flash or some unorthodox technique against Cerrone and being effective with it like he always does. He does have some really good wrestling, but I don't know, man. Cerrone's not the type of guy, he showed us time and time again, that you want to fiddle with on the ground at all. So I think what we're going to see here is probably a classic stand-up battle. I mean, both these guys, again, have the submission game that they're capable of landing a submission and maybe finishing each other. Both of them are capable of neutralizing each other out on the ground a little bit as well. So I think what we're going to see is a classic stand-up battle. And the way they match up, I think Ferguson's not going to be able to kind of wear out Cerrone like he has some of his other opponents. Cerrone's going to be game. He's shown some durability. I know he's gotten clipped, especially higher weight classes or against some heavy hitters in the past, going to the body maybe a little susceptible as well. But from what we've seen in his little resurgence here recently, Cerrone's never been fighting, I think, better, smarter, more effective. I think he's riding a confident streak right now again. I mean, his son obviously being born has turned his life around a little bit more, or at least gave him that extra boost of energy he needed to kind of get back on track, and it showed. So why I'm saying all this is I think Ferguson has kind of been, I mean, in his personal life, I mean, physically, he's coming off, obviously, the injuries. Now, he's performed relatively well, even off surgery. I get it. So Ferguson's just one of those warriors that, I mean, just a talented fighter, and he deserves to be in that title realm and mix, especially what he's accomplished in the streak he's on. He's definitely one of the best lightweights in the world. There's no question about it. But I just think this is a weird spot for him. I mean, Cerrone and him match up really well, and I think it's going to be a competitive fight. And I think, actually, Cerrone is a little bit more durable of the two. Ferguson gets caught, even though he's a tough guy to finish. I mean, he gets rocked and he gets hurt in fights. Now, credit to him that he's able to recover and usually comes back and wins those fights. But again, the guy like Cerrone, I don't think he's going to have that luxury. Cerrone's going to be game. He's going to be there. I don't think he's going to have that comeback ability against Cerrone, because I think Cerrone, if he puts it on him, I think Cerrone's capable of finishing him as well. So I like Cerrone as an underdog in this spot here. And again, throw out the MMA math, because I think it doesn't just make sense in this spot here. The way these guys match up, I mean, I think you have to lean towards Cerrone a little bit here. So should be an exciting fight. Should be a fun fight. And in a way, I'm surprised myself that I am leaning that way. But I do like the way he matches up with Ferguson. I mean, plain and simple. So the pick is Cerrone. I think he gets it done. There's probably a little bit of value left on him as a dog too.
And believe it or not, I'm going to come in on Donald Cerrone as well. I just feel like Cerrone has been so composed and he's fighting at such a high level right now. And with Tony Ferguson, he is just crazy unorthodox and unpredictable. And I mean, he can do a lot of crazy things in fights, but the issue is that he's been getting hurt repeatedly. You saw it in the Pettis fight. You saw it when he, you know, almost got knocked out by and finished by Vanetta in Vanetta's UFC debut. There's just time and time again that Ferguson gets clipped, but then comes back. And I think Donald Cerrone, if he clips Ferguson, I don't think Ferguson's recovering. I think Cerrone is such a good finisher that he can dive on a submission or finish you off with a TKO on the ground. I mean, he knows what to do when he has an opponent hurt. And Cerrone just has looked solid. I mean, he picked apart Hernandez, dropping down, back down to lightweight. And I think at this point, I think he's learned a lot from that run that he had at welterweight, where he did pick up some very high quality wins and was becoming a contender in the welterweight division. But I mean, he's always to me been a lightweight. And now that he's back, dropping back down, this is a potential winnable fight for him. Tony Ferguson is powerful. He's quick. He's athletic and obviously unorthodox, but you know, he doesn't really have a huge reach advantage over Cerrone like he does against most fighters. You know, Cerrone's at 73 inches. Ferguson's at 76. Cerrone's actually the taller fighter. So I think this is going to be a really, really intriguing matchup. And Ferguson does have some serious holes offensively defensively in his game. And if Cerrone is able to clip him with a big right or left hand on the feet, he can hurt him. Cerrone could hurt him with a head kick. Cerrone could hurt him with leg kicks. You gotta remember Ferguson had a knee injury, not that long ago. So that's something that could be in the back of his mind. And I mean, we've just seen that Ferguson has these defensive lapses at times. And as long as Donald Cerrone doesn't get off to a really slow start, there's an opportunity here to pull off that upset, because Ferguson has power. Ferguson has, some grappling, but he also, one of his biggest strengths is his pace and conditioning. And in a 3-round fight, if Cerrone can just get off to a good start, then Ferguson's conditioning and pace may not matter, because he could lose 2 of the first 3 rounds and end up losing a decision. But it's not just that. I also think that Cerrone could finish Ferguson. We've seen Ferguson, like I said, get hurt, and I think Cerrone has the ability to jump on a hurt Ferguson and put him out. So, I mean, Ferguson's been on an incredible run, but I think that this could be a huge, shocking upset. And I'm going to side with Cowboy here. I think that he's on a run for that belt, and this is the fight that potentially gets him that next title shot. So Donald Cerrone is going to be my pick. Now, moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the women's flyweight division, we have Valentina Shevchenko, the champion, who is 16-3, taking on Jessica Ai, who is 14-6 with 1 no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened Shevchenko minus 1,000, the comeback on Jessica Ai at plus 600. And right now, what you're seeing over at BetDSI is Shevchenko minus 1,000, Jessica Ai plus 600. So still staying pretty steady over at BetDSI. Looking at the Donbass screen, though, to give you more of a market price, there are some 1,300s out there. So, I mean, you got to price shop around. There's anywhere from minus 1,000 on the Donbass screen to minus 1,500 or so. So if you think minus 1,000, there's still some value out there, head over to BetDSI and you can get down on that line, or some other books, like I said, on the Donbass screen as well. That said, I mean, I'm not obviously one to bet 10-1 over a fighter, even though Shevchenko, I'm not saying the line is not justified in this spot. I think, obviously, those of you guys that followed the podcast for many years know I'm a big fan of Jessica Ai. I respect her. I think she's a little bit underrated, and I'm glad she's getting this title shot. And I'm glad the UFC brought the flyweight division for the ladies in, because again, I've said it time and time again, that was the rightful weight class that Jessica Ai and several other of these ladies, kind of belong in. So glad to see it. But unfortunately for Jessica Ai, Shevchenko, in my opinion, I've said it time and time again as well, is the best female fighter on the UFC roster. I know she has losses to Nunes, but still, pound for pound, I still believe Shevchenko is the best overall fighter. And I just think it's just a tough stylistic matchup for Jessica Ai anywhere the fight takes place. Shevchenko's a better striker. Shevchenko's a better wrestler. She's a better jiu-jitsu practitioner. I mean, Jessica Ai will be competitive, probably more competitive than most of us think, because I think her striking is a bit underrated. Offensively, if she lets her hands go, she can be effective at times as well. And she's a gamer. I mean, she's definitely, like I said, she's earned this spot. She's faced good competition throughout her career. Even her losses that people were kind of, you know, saying, hey, maybe, you know, she should be out the door with this, you know, the losing streak that she was on at one point. But if you look at those losses, I mean, they've been to really good competition. And those were some close fights in most cases as well. So she's right there competing with the best in the world for a long time. And again, her going on this streak over decent competition as well, earning this title shot, you got to take your hat off to her. So Jessica Ai deserves this shot. I'm glad she's getting it, and I hope she fares well in this spot. But I just can't pick her in this spot here. And I just think Shevchenko, again, it's hard for me to pick anybody over Shevchenko right now. So I don't see too many flaws in her game, and I think Shevchenko is just going to just do what she does best again and either finish Ai late in the fight or probably just decision Ai and just outpoint her along the way. But again, I think Jessica Ai is going to be probably a little bit more competitive than we're all thinking, but still not enough to get it done against Shevchenko. So the pick is Shevchenko to win and retain her flyweight title.
Yeah, I don't have much to add here. This is a huge mismatch, and Jessica Ai has looked better, dropping down to 125 pounds, where at one point she was the best women flyweight in the world. But that was when the division was still extremely new, and UFC didn't even have women fighting, or barely did at the time. So this is a different UFC, and I really hasn't gotten that much better since that time that she did stand atop the division. She's added a little bit of wrestling to her game, but her striking really hasn't gotten any better, and her chin is definitely questionable. So I think Shevchenko, as long as she can find an opening in Ai's defense on the feet, I think Shevchenko can crack Ai and knock her out. And on the ground, while Ai does have improved wrestling, Shevchenko has elite submission skills and he has some sneaky trips, and Ai has had some issues off of her back. So I can see Shevchenko getting top position or just putting Ai in bad situations on the canvas as well. So there really isn't any one specific area that I think Jessica Ai has an advantage over Shevchenko. I mean, I think Shevchenko is pound for pound, you know, one of the top two or three women on the planet. And this is a bad stylistic matchup for Ai. She does deserve this opportunity, but other than that, you know, I just don't see how she wins. So I have to side with Shevchenko. I think she either wins by knockout or a one-sided decision. So Shevchenko is going to be my pick. Now, moving on to the main event of the evening. In the bantamweight division, we have the vacant UFC bantamweight title on the line between the flyweight champion Henry Cejudo, who is 14-2, and top contender in the bantamweight division, Marlon Moraes, who is 22-5-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Moraes -185, the comeback on Cejudo at +155. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, we are seeing the line all the way down to Moraes -120, the comeback -101 on Cejudo right now. And again, on the Don Best screen, we're seeing -125s out there. So it's basically anywhere between 120 to -130 on Moraes right now. So needless to say, the early action took the dog money and, you know, bet on Cejudo. Another tough one to set. I mean, Cejudo stepping up, obviously going back up to bantamweight, he's performed relatively well there in the past. I mean, the guy's just a stud. We all know his Olympic background and what he's capable of. I mean, I think the improvements in his game, I mean, are so evident and so remarkable in my opinion. I mean, the guy, obviously we all knew, you know, what he was about coming into MMA with his wrestling background, but his striking wasn't that great. I mean, he needed a lot of work, I think, especially early on, obviously in his career, but the strides and improvement he's made in the striking realm, I mean, he's a legit threat on the feet right now. He's proven it the last few fights, evidently. I mean, obviously, you know, to an extreme. I mean, the guy has speed. He's got power. He's got accuracy now. He's got confidence, which is a very dangerous thing. Cejudo is legit to go along with that world-class wrestling. So he is a threat at 125 pounds, at 135 pounds. Make no mistake, this guy is legit as they come. So one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world right now. And again, in my opinion, he's earned it with the improvements that he's made. So that said, he's up against it here against Moraes, though, man. Moraes is a quality fighter. I mean, former World Series of Fighter champion, obviously now what they call the PFL, faced a lot of solid competition before he came into the UFC. And then since the UFC, he's been on a tear. I mean, redeeming that loss against the Sun Tzu was so impressive. I mean, just beating quality competition. Race obviously has that striking background. Obviously, he's got jiu-jitsu going along with it, though. He's training with stud wrestlers in the past. He's just got the total complete game. But the thing of beauty with Moraes is just his striking ability. I mean, he's fun to watch. He's got some speed. He's got some power. He's got some accuracy. He's a little bit unorthodox with his delivery of the techniques. His kicking game's outstanding as well. He has more tools in his arsenal over Cejudo. So really, in my opinion, he's the better striker here. His takedown defense should probably hold up, because Cejudo at times, even though he is a world-class wrestler, that wrestling hasn't converted as well at times. I mean, it did obviously against the Mighty Mouse fight where he won the title. I mean, that his wrestling definitely paid dividends then. But at other times throughout his UFC career, we haven't seen him utilize that wrestling to his capability. So I think Moraes is going to be able to probably keep this fight upright more times than not. And if that's the case, he's got to be concerned with Cejudo's power. But I still think he's a better striker, and he's going to have his chances to land along the way and let Cejudo make that mistake and possibly capitalize on that one as well. So I'm expecting an awesome fight. I am never going to count Cejudo out. I mean, in his career, the guy's just that talented and that special of an athlete. Obviously, he's proven it time and time again. But with that said, I can't pick him in this spot. I just think Moraes is the better striker, and it probably turns into a striking affair, and Moraes pulls it out. So the pick is Moraes, and again, around that minus 120, minus 130, I did open it a little bit higher, and I think it should be a little bit higher with all due respect to Cejudo. So there might be a little bit of value on Moraes. And we are seeing, I should point out as well, we're hearing some rumors coming out there that maybe there's an injury or whatnot floating around with Cejudo. But take it for what it's worth. That's just rumors, and sometimes the rumors, there is something to it. Sometimes it's just total BS and it doesn't affect the fight at all. So take it for what it's worth out there, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see some starting to come in on Moraes a little bit as well as the rumors start to maybe circulate a little bit more. So we'll keep our ears, you know, up against it, try to hear what's out there a little bit, our eyes on social media as well to see what's going on. I would recommend doing the same out there for all of you. Hopefully we do see this fight. The rumors are kind of false and we see this fight take place and there's no injuries, because I want to see these guys perform 100% and to the best of their ability, because this is a world-class fight and I'm looking forward to it a lot. So the pick is Moraes. I think he gets it done, maybe possibly inside the distance. But outside of that, I think this is a fight that's definitely going to live up to the hype. So I'm looking forward to it.
This really is a tremendous fight. And Marlon Moraes has just answered all the questions so far in his career. And he's really impressed me. I mean, back when he was fighting Miguel Torres in the World Series of Fighting's first event, I was like, who is this guy? You know, he just knocked out, you know, a former WEC champion. And then he goes and smashes Tyson Nam, who was actually, that was actually a name back then. And then to go on that huge run as the champion and finally make that UFC debut, where he lost a split decision to a Sun Tzu, and I was like, well, maybe he's overrated. But since that split decision loss, he has been unbelievable, picking up the victory over Dodson and then finishing Sterling Rivera in a Sun Tzu, the revenge fight against a Sun Tzu in back-to-back-to-back fights. The guy has just gotten better and better and better every time we've seen him. His last three fights combined don't even equal one round. That's how good he's been against three of the best bantamweights in the entire, on the planet. Three, in my opinion, top five or six bantamweights in the world. And he's finished them in combined less than 5 minutes. So, you know, Marlon Moraes is absolutely legit. I mean, this kid has elite striking skills, heavy hands, nasty kicking ability, both to the legs, body, and head. And he has a developing submission game as well, picking up that guillotine choke submission over a Sun Tzu. I mean, who submits Rafael a Sun Tzu? You know, that was shocking to me. So, you know, this kid is absolutely legitimate. And, Henry Cejudo, though, on the other hand, to pick up the victory over, even if it was a split decision against Demetrius Johnson, that was incredible. The fact that he bounced back after a really ugly loss to Johnson earlier in his career, and then in the fight against TJ Dillashaw as a decent underdog to finish him in 30 seconds, at that UFC Fight Night event for ESPN, that was amazing. So, this is two incredibly talented fighters that avenged, you know, their first UFC loss, in incredible fashion, and I can't wait to see what happens. But Cejudo has heavy hands as well. He always did have some decent boxing, but he's really taken it to the next level after, that first loss to Johnson. You saw it in the Benavidez fight where, you know, he had Benavidez hurt bad and probably should have won that fight. Was a bad decision in my opinion. Then he knocks out Wilson Hayes, and then knocks out TJ Dillashaw. So I've been very impressed with the improvement in Cejudo's striking and the power that he's been able to display. But I think really what is going to help him win is not the power, because Marlon Moraes has not shown any issues with taking a punch so far in his career. And one thing you do have to consider is that Cejudo, while he has shown improvements in his power, all three of the times that he's showcased those heavy hands, it's been against fighters that haven't had particularly good chins. Hayes has been knocked out repeatedly. Dillashaw's been hurt or knocked out multiple times. And Benavidez has as well. At least he's been hurt or knocked out. So it might want to take some of the improvements in Cejudo's power with a grain of salt, because we haven't really seen it against a guy that's been known to have, you know, a really durable chin. But if Cejudo can get his wrestling going, I mean, winning a gold medal in the Olympics is important. And if he can do that, if he can get that, the takedowns against Moraes, then he could be in a good position here. But something just tells me that Marlon Moraes is going to be too big and too strong. And at bantamweight, while Cejudo is impressive, I can't expect Cejudo to repeatedly get inside against Moraes without getting clipped along the way. Moraes is just so technically sound, and everything that he does, it can just be devastating. And I think that he can keep this fight upright. And even if Cejudo does get it to the floor, I think Moraes can threaten with submissions as well. So I just really like Marlon Moraes here. I think that this guy has the makings of a champion. And I think that he walks away with this fight with a victory here and becomes the UFC bantamweight champion. So Marlon Moraes is going to be my pick. I thought if Moraes had fought TJ Dillashaw that Moraes would walk away as the champion. So I do think that he gets this win. So Marlon Moraes. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 238. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMA OB Premium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.